the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 226. Pizza, pizza?
Yeah. I thought, you know, we never really came to a consensus on that, but pizza, pizza. And that's only because Mike Ilitch, who is the founder of Little Caesars Pizza and owner of the Detroit Tigers and Detroit Red Wings, passed away a couple of days ago. So so pizza is kind of the mother's milk of programmers. And
we love pizza.
That's right.
Yeah. And matter of fact, college people love cheap pizza.
That's right. And they filled that niche.
They filled that niche.
Oh, yeah.
And I will admit, hot and ready are the only two adjectives I can use to describe that pizza positively.
They just came out with it when I was in college. So it was it was perfect. And that was in the days that they only had it on like Tuesday evenings. So when I was there Tuesday for a late class, mm-hmm. me and a couple of my students, we all got together. And
yeah. You know, I think, and speaking of pizza, I think some of these fast food places have jumped the shark, if I can use such an outdated term, as far as some of the food, new food things they come up with. There was this, I think it was a pizza, and I want to say it was put out by Kentucky Fried Chicken. Did you see that
post?
Yes,
I posted about that.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really?
I see so many things I was trying to figure. Yeah. So instead of the crust, isn't it a piece of
– they take a piece of fried chicken.
Flatten it.
And then you put – they flatten it. I'm guessing it's like a chicken breast. Huh. I don't know what's under it because they covered it because they laid – I love this – sauce, cheese, pepperonis on top of it, and they bake it. So it's a breadless pizza other than the fact that it's actually breaded. They breaded chicken with pizza melted on top. And then someone says, isn't that just chicken parmesan?
Pretty close.
With pepperoni.
What's it? Chisa? Well, no.
Chisa or something?
Yeah. And I
that's
just thought,
what they call it.
I don't know.
I just thought it was crazy.
Like it's like chicken pizza.
It's like Taco Bell and all the stuff they do. Anyway, so.
Yeah. Also, it was one of these. It's like a million calories, I'm sure, with all kinds of grease and fat,
and
which means Americans will love it.
Yeah, that's right. So this is Mary Tomich.
Tony Bemis.
And Tom Lawrence.
We forgot that part, but just for a little while.
Phil is traveling today because he's going to be a regular on our show now. But he
that's
is,
right.
Yeah,
and I'll be kind of a semi-regular. So I'm just kind of being here maybe once a month just to make a little note of that. So you haven't gotten rid of me yet.
Yeah.
Won't be able to file an age discrimination suit yet. but anyway, we also owe our listeners an apology, don't we?
Yeah, the sound audio quality was so bad last week. I'm sorry. And that was all on the mixer end. When the original is really bad, it's not much you can do to clean it up.
And to clarify that, Tony's the mixer.
That's right.
He's the mixer guy.
Yeah, he's at the controls. So I don't know what buttons were hit. We know we had some issues. We do apologize for that. I did my best to clean it up, but there's only so much when there's not data there. You know, it's not like when was it show CSI enhance?
Right.
No, there's no enhancing.
so we apologize for that, and to make up for it, what we've done this week is we have professionally prepared this show. We tested everything ahead of time. And we hope you're enjoying this audio.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you hit record, right?
I did.
Yeah. That's been good. All right.
That has happened.
So we got that out of the way. So, you know, again, we apologize.
All right.
Okay. Well, let's catch up.
All right. Well, I want to say if I'm a little off my game this morning.
Oh, yeah.
It's because I've been
Mr.
up
All-Nighter.
For the last. Yeah. Well, it's 7 a.m. And since 7 a.m. yesterday, I've gotten about 4 hours of sleep. And that's like mixed, broken up all throughout the day. So between midnight and now I actually got probably about 15 minutes of sleep. Because we had a project at work that we were, cutting over to some new WAN routers in the data center. So that's going to take, that took down a lot of stuff and we got it all back up and we successfully had to back out, but successful is the positive word.
Oh, you had to back out of the project? Part of it.
Yeah, because it was like a five-part project.
Okay.
And we got like parts one done. And we had to successfully back out of the rest of it.
What was the projection? Was to finish all five parts?
Yeah.
Okay.
All five within 5 hours.
But, got it.
So an average of one part per hour.
Pretty much.
That advanced math paid off.
And for people that don't know, Tony manages IT for a hospital, which is why they can't just turn things off.
Right. Yeah. It's funny when IT and networking becomes patient, like
centric.
Yeah. Then, what do they call it? It affects patient health. Then it's very important, and they dump a lot of money into it to make sure it works.
Which is good. That's important because some hospitals do not, and they're the ones in our news articles.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, yeah, and that kind of reminds me of something I posted in Google Plus, I think a couple months ago. And it was a medical device that had it was from St. Jude Medical, as a matter of fact, and it was some kind of heart device that had a software flaw in it, and they had to patch it right away. And I posted, no, sir, that heart palpitation is not due to you. It's due to a DDoS attack.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it keeps you busy, huh, Tony?
Yeah, yeah.
Keeps you busy and awake.
So if you hear any snoring, we'll just push on Tony a little bit.
Yeah.
This is why we do it live together, so we can wake him up.
That's right. That's right. We're on either side of him, so there'll be no rest for the wicked this morning.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything
else?
Stuff
happens.
I switched my internet at home from UVerse to WoW.
Wow.
And, wow. clever Tom.
Right. And it's actually not that bad. The best thing about it is that I'm getting rid of the ATT UVerse wireless TV adapter thing. And why I'm excited about that is that it either it uses UPnP or something, but it would not allow me to point 443 to my own equipment.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So now that I have it pointed to my own stuff, then I'm able to run my own cloud over 443.
Oh, really?
Very yeah. Cool. And then with that on, then I can do Let's Encrypt cert. So now I have a trusted certificate on that. Yeah.
Wow.
Own cloud or next cloud?
Next cloud.
Okay.
Yep. So, and then they have a working client for my PC, and
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm actually I would do a show and tell because I'm holding in my hand, and I've got the attention of really got the attention of Tom over there.
It's got things.
Yeah. What I have in my hand, for those of you who are only listening to the project, is a really cool clock. This was a Kickstarter project, and I think I may have mentioned it maybe a few months ago that I had signed up for this thing because it was last year. So what it is an analog clock that uses voltmeter sensors or, you know, the little dials to tell the time. And
can I see it?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We are all fascinated
and
by this.
It's Arduino-based the Arduino or the little – it's got a little chipboard inside there. It's got I was not too happy with the way they packaged it because I'm going to have to tweak my little this one's sticking out a little bit, so I'll have to tweak it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I might change the color of them, so I may have to
paint
the little.
Now, how does the time get set?
The time gets set. If you take a look at the board inside the cabinet, now this is a little it would be something that was set on a desktop or something. It's probably about 8 inches. 8 inches wide, maybe, what do you think, about 4.5, 5 inches tall, something like that. Anyway, but if you take a look at the board, there are two little buttons that you press in.
Okay.
And one is for hours and one is for minutes. And when you first add the batteries, what happens is the clock itself sets itself up. The dial should be straight up. So then if they're not, you just calibrate them. And once you've calibrated, I kind of calibrated it yesterday, but I'm going to probably redo it today. And so then the clock itself then will just register the minutes and hours by the dial just moving from left to right. So, of course, the minute one moves faster than the hour one.
Do you want me to set it over here? Do you want to hand it
back? Just go ahead. You can just set it down.
When it goes from 12:59 to 1 o'clock, the minute –
Yeah, the minute hand will go all the way back to zero and then just starts going again.
Now, this is pretty neat.
I have not sat there because this came yesterday and I had a party last night, so I wasn't sitting there looking at my clock.
Move it over a little bit. I can't see the
– Oh, we're going to – There we go. Yeah, we might see it happen here.
Or do you want to set it right here and then the people on YouTube can watch it? Yeah, why don't we do that?
How many YouTube viewers do we have?
We have two right now.
All right. Thank you, by the way, for joining us on YouTube. All right. So anyway,
Visible in the YouTube?
in the YouTube, in the YouTube sphere.
It's visible, but I don't think you can really see the fingers.
No, you can't.
Or the hands.
That's
on
all
it.
Right.
Yeah, that's all right. It's still neat.
That's all right. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, so that was it.
Yeah. If you for a little, oh, Tony, you pulled the stuff out of it.
Yeah, Tony's pulling the stuffing right out of it. That's all right, Tony. Oh, it's all right. Believe me, it's not. It just sits in the back here, so you know, so you can have access to it. So
it's still pretty cool.
So anyway, so yeah, I got my clock yesterday. I was very excited about that. I'll play around with it more today. And I don't know, was that me?
I think it was me. I got
okay.
My phone on
Oops. So somebody got a text. But in addition to that, the other thing I did is I finally upgraded my workstation at home, my two monitor workstation. I went from Kubuntu to KDE Neon yesterday.
Yes.
Yes.
I've heard good things.
Yes. And I have been overall pretty happy about it. I haven't had a chance to fully dive in and just check things out to make sure everything went well because my home partition sits on a different drive. And so I wanted to make sure that when I installed KDE Neon that it used my existing home partition. Mm. So when I fired it back up, it kind of did. I have home, and then I had the directory that apparently got created when I installed Neon, and then I had my own existing one. So I went ahead and got rid of the other, and it's all set up looking good now. So put Dropbox in. You know, I use Dropbox. I know everybody don't hate on me now.
You need to set up OwnCloud or NextCloud.
You know, I do have an old. Well, now this I have a computer that's sitting at home, a desktop that's got 4 gigs of RAM. That probably is enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, maybe I will.
Oh, you know, it really don't need that much RAM to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that run it on a Raspberry Pi. So if you're only going to do it for file syncing, then you don't need a whole lot of RAM.
All right, but anyway, so I got Dropbox installed and it was syncing last night and I thought I'd have my stuff here, you know, because when I log in, but I think it's still syncing, so we'll see what happens. But other than that, Tom, you'll be happy to know that I think it was yesterday the Kaden Live team posted a maintenance update to Kaden Live. I want you to know that this morning I had or last night I did an upgrade, and this morning I checked. I have that version in KDE Neon.
Yes, I have their PPA, so I get all the new versions too. But yeah, I like that. That's one of the reasons I thought about KDE Neon. There's a couple KDE projects I use that I like that I have PPAs for, and I'm like, that would solve this. Yeah.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. So, but everything looks pretty stable, and so yeah, that's what I did. And then the other thing is I'm going back to Iceland. Did I tell you that?
Oh, I want to say you mentioned it, but that's cool.
Yeah, next month. I'm about a month from now.
Are you getting a waterproof case for your phone?
No, but I do have insurance. All right. Tom, that was good of you to remember that I lost my phone the last time I was there. Yeah, so we're going to go glacier walking, and maybe be a volcano eruption while we're there. Mm. All this exciting
stuff. Is why we have another person on our podcast.
That's right. Because I'll be semi-retired.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough about
me. And you're exploring volcanoes.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Anyways, so, Tom.
So what did I do?
Yeah, well, what did you do?
The last time I brought up, and I'll figure out, I'll put some closure to it. Someone ripped off my videos and just simply re-uploaded them. So YouTube took them down, and I shared with other YouTubers that they had their videos stolen. So that all got taken care of. It was an interesting process filing the claim on YouTube for that. They actually have a nice process for it, which is cool. So, but they took it down. The guy never replied to me because I messaged him too. So why are you stealing my videos? I think he just didn't have a good reply for that. I decided also to do some deeper dives into Tor, and I did a review on my YouTube channel of Tales. You know, I did it not like a normal distro review because it's a live distro, so there's not a ton to talk about. But what I did was I took two systems, and because I'm using different, you know, monitoring tools on my own firewall, I played detective, so to speak, and go, here's the data feed that shows up when you boot Tails. And what I was really showing that there's not – because one of the problems you have is, of course, DNS leaks and things like that when you're using Tor. So I showed that Tails doesn't leak, and I was curious if it did. You know, and it jumps right on there, jumps right into the Tor network. And I compared that to using the Tor browser on your own computer, which doesn't really leak data, but – you're also using it on your computer, so there's really easy potential for Well, one of the, you know, attacks is getting you to download a file that also has a link in it, but the link opens up a browser that's not the Tor browser, so it compromises the real IP address of your computer. And it was actually the way the FBI was crafting attacks on certain people. They would get them to download a file and open a link in the file, and if they didn't open it in the Tor browser they had open, it would reveal their real IP and how they were connecting to it because of the embedded documents. And that's one of the things that Tails eliminates, is it just keeps you from doing dumb things because the whole distro is built within Tor. So the distro connects to Tor, does not do any connections. So even your command line utilities are connecting locally. They run everything out, which, of course, is what how it avoids all the DNS leaks. It encapsulates everything. So everything you open in Tails also is connecting through Tor, not just the browser. So each you want to open up a file utility, anything you open always is connecting over Tor. So I did kind of a deep dive and did some analysis on that. I've been looking at different document management solutions because I'm going to be guesting on another podcast this afternoon talking about IT and document management and all that fun stuff, which is the Podnuts podcast. Then what else did I do?
Podnuts, is that the like the weekly or is it daily?
Yeah, weekly. So yeah, the weekly one that's on Sundays.
Okay.
So with Jeff Halash as the host.
He's actually from Michigan too, isn't he?
He is. He lives right over in Canton. He's not too far at all. So, and it's funny. It was funny. I was on the show once or twice, and I realized, I'm like, you're local. He mentioned something about Detroit, and I'm like, well, you're a local guy. That's cool. So I've been on there a few times. So I love talking, you know, IT business and things like that.
Yeah.
So other than putting more and more stuff on my YouTube channel for all of that and keeping people from ripping off my videos, which I don't mind if anyone – everything's Creative Commons.
Well, if they use them, they need to – provide attribution to you.
Yeah, I'm Creative Commons non-commercial use, and what he did was just completely just copied my video and put it up with monetization on, just not even any change. He didn't like make reference to something I did, so I thought that was kind of like, well,
yeah.
Then I took his yesterday. I was hung out with the kids, took him to the whole family, took him to the DIA and the Science Center, and we did all that fun stuff.
Fun. That whole museum district is great, isn't it?
It is. Just wandering around there and looking at art and things like that. It's like a change from sitting in front of the computer. And then I was filming all
Did the kids know what to do?
Yes. The security guard looked nervous every time my son was running around because I'm like, you should be nervous because he wants to touch everything. I kept him from touching things, but it's like I almost told him I'm going to glue his hands in his pockets.
Wow.
He's 10. He just like, Dad, look. Everything is Dad, look. He's fascinated.
And you saw the knights, the armor, the knight's armor and all that and the big court. Yeah.
My 10-year-old son has a lot of unusual things he says. You know, a lot of kids say things, but he says things. And he just said, I don't think they had clothes back then, Dad, because everyone seems to be naked. He just like, that's his observations of what you think of the
right.
You know, and then we figured we'd continue on this art thing, so we put some music on, and every now and then I torture myself and listen to whatever the top charts are, which is usually really awful. And I just went through a playlist, and me and him were sitting on the couch watching the latest music videos, and he looks at me and says the funniest thing. He says, Dad, he goes, I think this band decided there was enough good music and they just made crap. He goes, I just figured there's enough good music.
Gotta have
in the world.
Balance in the world, right?
And he's 10.
Right.
He just looks at me and says that. And just, he's like, you can change this one. I'm just like,
wow. That's pretty good.
He has insight.
I think so.
So, other than that, that was pretty much what's been occupying my time. Usual business stuff, finishing up projects.
Sure.
We finished off a really big one, which I'm going to do a video for. I flew my drone around inside of a building because their building was that
because
cool.
Because you could.
And because I could. And the people, we were doing, you know, we had permission to film there. We didn't tell them we were flying a drone. We always get permission to film for our clients. And it was kind of funny. They see the drone and they're like, that's cool. They're like, you have a drone and you're flying in our building. You know, I'm like, are you okay with this? Like, oh, no, can we watch? I'm like, of course. You own the building.
It's probably their first foray close up with a drone.
Yeah, it kind of was. And one of the guys that was there, one of the construction workers that was working on stuff, he has two jobs. He does what he does there. He's also the guy that fixes flagpoles on top of buildings. And he's been –
Fixes flagpoles. Yeah. What goes wrong with a flagpole other than it falling down?
Apparently they need maintenance.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't sure either. I kind of thought – I was going to submit, but he was really asking me a lot more questions about my drone. And he was talking about what it's like to be on top of the really tall buildings. And what he does is when he climbs up these poles, because you climb up to these really crazy service places, and he puts GoPros on himself. And he has a YouTube channel where he does it. And I can't remember the name of it. But he says if you type in like flagpole climbing Detroit, he comes up. I'm like, I forgot to look until I just mentioned it now. So, yeah. That's
exciting.
Yeah.
I saw, I think there was a little video of climbing up the Mackinac Bridge and being on top of the Mackinac Bridge, which for people who are not familiar, that's the bridge that connects the two peninsulas here in the state of Michigan. And it's fantastic. And then I think there was another video of one of those wind turbines, you know, those full-size wind turbines going up, or the big towers. I tell you, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I'd be a little – I think my heart would be beating faster.
I have a friend that does that for a living.
I would do it.
He services the local towers around here, cell phone towers specifically and police towers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. That's his job. And he takes pictures from the top all the time. He does selfies up there. It's kind of funny. It's fun to follow him on Facebook to see what he's posting. Mm-hmm. Oh, one last thing was – so the new guy I hired, been working here for over 30 days now, he's using Linux. And because he's also a fellow podcaster, he has his other stuff he does. He's also a comedian. But he's going to write up a review, and maybe we'll have him as a guest on our show, of what it's like coming – he's never used Linux prior to working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's fully in. He loves it. He's like, wow, this is great. Why didn't I switch to this sooner? And it was kind of a fear of not switching, but having me there and, you know, and working for me means –
And did you say he used Windows before?
Mac. So I think it was less of a challenge. Well, he used both. He had a Windows computer and a Mac computer.
So he's got that basic familiarity of using more than one operating system.
Yes. And he's tech savvy, so, you know, but he still hadn't done it. So now he's
– I would have put him on FreeBSD.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Mac has its roots.
Well, and I put him on Ubuntu because it's nice, stable, and easy. Okay. But then he did drag the bar to the bottom. He likes it there better. But he didn't even ask me how to do that. He, like, figured it out. So.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
So I looked. I'm like, why is your bar on the bottom? He goes, because I think it belongs there. I'm like, welcome to Linux.
Yeah.
You can think something belongs there and then move it.
Yeah, right. Although I've always thought Ubuntu did a nice, you know, as far as efficient use of screen real estate.
Yes.
I thought having it on the left or the right, wherever, was a far better way to go. But
yeah.
But I think people get used to. Now, having said that, I can move KDEs to the side, but where do I have it? At the bottom.
Yep.
Right. The same thing with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand that having it wide doesn't make as much sense because most of your web pages aren't as wide as a widescreen monitor anyways. So you might as well put the bar on the side there, and then you get more up and down, so you're not scrolling as much.
I auto hide mine.
You auto what?
I auto hide my bar on the side because I don't launch once. I spend way too much time in a browser probably, but once the browser's open. Mm-hmm. And for video editing, I got my three screens, so screen real estate's not an issue. But I open up and I'll launch, you know, the Caden Live, and I open up I have like a layout for all my windows for doing my editing workflow, and then I just.
Cool.
Yeah, and then you can just alt-tab between things.
That's easily. All I do is alt-tab between things. Exactly.
Excellent.
Did you drop something?
No, I was just looking at the clock. The clock went back. The thing has already flipped back.
Oh.
And we missed it.
We missed it. No, I'm just looking for my phone. I have a computer malfunction. I was going to try to keep secret.
Oh.
just a word of advice. If your computer appears frozen, never just automatically reboot if you upgrade or updating.
Oh,
so that's all I'm going to say. So I'm fine though.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, Tom, good stuff you got man. Good stuff. Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're going on to.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
Yeah, listener feedback. So the first one we got was from Brad Alexander. And he told us that he's been listening to the show and he heard a bunch of the clients with major issues related to CryptoLocker and various ransom malware stuff. But he says that Tom, I think he's talking to you. You asked whether you talked about or thought about putting them on something with the ZFS.
Yeah,
like your
and I think I replied to that. Whenever we can, we do. Because that's the nice thing is about ZFS is you can just roll backwards. We have some of our clients using that with ZFS snapshots.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way ZFS works, if you want to dig into this, it's kind of cool. You can take a snapshot of file system and take another snapshot of file system, and the only differences are what was changed, which means your snapshots, you can revert to a previous version with very, very little overhead in storage. And also, we actually use this at my office, and we use a combination of SyncThing and ZFS, because the problem with SyncThing is it works like Dropbox. If I goof up a file and delete it, it deletes it on every copy it's simultaneously for backups. So what we've done is put ZFS rolling snapshots on that for the same purpose. If all my files were to get corrupted, I have 30 days of rollbacks on the file server for that. So, it's definitely a great strategy, and I think more enterprise companies are looking into doing that. So,
yeah. Well, and then he makes a good point also that if one Bitcoin is $900, then
two
one
Bitcoins
time having
are 1800.
having one time of being hit would pay for a new file server like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, $1,000 would get you a pretty good NAS. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially for small business.
I wish there was a better way to do this. People ask me because I'm in several IT forums, and literally a question I got this morning was, what's a good distro that I can replace my Active Directory server with? And unfortunately, there's nothing that great for that. You can do delegated permissions and all that in FreeNAS, for example, but if you want them to have like full normal Active Directory where they can change your password and have that type of level of permissions, it just doesn't integrate well with Samba, because Samba is a reverse engineering of the protocol. Mm. It's not the protocol implemented as it's supposed to be. So it's kind of what you have to do, and this is not the optimal in the Linux world, but you have to buy a Microsoft Active Directory controller and then make a decision to also buy a second computer that runs FreeNAS and ZFS and tie it together to your Active Directory domain so your permissions follow, or manually manage all the permissions on FreeNAS. I do have some clients doing that. Mm-hmm. So those are like the two options you have that can do that. So it's not easy. I wish it was like a press a button inclusive solution, but Microsoft really prevents that.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to run them on two separate boxes. If you get a beefy enough box, you can run virtual machines.
Yeah, you could run virtual machines on there. You could run FreeNAS in a Hyper-V, but I know FreeNAS and ZFS do not really love being inside of that, and you lose your RAID redundancy, so you have that too. And generally, if you build FreeNAS wants to interact directly with the hardware, so it can interact directly with like a RAID array of drives and set up a RAID Z configuration. But that being said, when you look at the cost of business, you can build a beefy ZFS box for a small business for under $1,000 that's got like 4 3-terabyte hard drives in it.
Yeah.
And it's not that difficult, not that expensive, plenty of redundancy, and roll ZFS snapshots into it. Yeah. And a lot of companies already have an Active Directory controller, so this is just an add-on solution. We actually have our CAD and engineering company using a solution like this. So,
yeah, and speaking of Active Directory controllers, I don't know if you guys took a look at the DistroWatch list. I know we'll be talking about it shortly. NetServer just had a release, and they're claiming that you can completely replace your Microsoft Active Directory controller with their product.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that do that, but I'm always – and it's been a long time since I tested. I could be wrong because I remember the earlier days when I tested this. It just never worked as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm interested.
I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I know that. Like in FreeNAS 10, there's supposed to be much better integration, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'll do some testing on that. I think everyone should just use Linux. Quit using Windows on desktop. Solve all your problems.
Yeah.
You know, I would. And speaking of that, you know, the other thing I ended up doing is I installed – well, first of all, my trading platform is a platform called Thinkorswim, which is now owned by TD Ameritrade. That Thinkorswim platform, I think it's Java-based, which I know there's probably some grumblings about that. However, I installed it when I was running Kubuntu. I'm going to try it in KDE Neon. I installed it in Kubuntu, and it runs wonderfully.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, wow. Now if I can get myself out of that other platform I use for the other stuff I do, why would I need Windows?
Yeah.
So I
forgot to mention that. I was pretty excited.
That is cool.
Looks great. I mean, it looks perfect.
The Achilles heel for most small businesses has really been the QuickBooks. QuickBooks or Peachtree is universally used, and occasionally Sage, but for the most part, because those applications run inside of a Windows environment, that's always been like a big hang up for businesses to switch.
Yeah, there's some cloud services coming out that
yep.
that are supposed to be able to replace that. And so you should be able to use that on Linux. But
which is why Microsoft's worried. They are really a cloud solution away from being irrelevant.
Yeah. Speaking of cloud and Microsoft, we got another feedback.
Yeah.
It's inviting us to come out to Microsoft Build.
Yes.
So, and they're like, oh yeah, we're Linux. You know, our Azure runs 70% as, there's a 30% as Linux or somewhere in that range.
It's there's a lot of Linux running in Azure. But anyway, that was one of our feedbacks is that, yeah, and maybe we'll do that. They want us to do there. They want us to drink the Microsoft Kool-Aid and join their cult and see what – oh, sorry. Going a little off on that. But they invited us out there to the Microsoft Build Conference, and we all seen the – you know, Microsoft loves Linux and all the ads they got doing there. But maybe it's an opportunity for us because maybe we'll get invited more than once, or maybe we'll ask a question that will not get us invited back. But
right.
Yeah, we're thinking it's something we're definitely considering.
So Tom and I will go on the – well, we're thinking about if we can get this to work, right? But we're going to go on the mindset that we're trying to bring Linux and Windows together to be able to like create solutions for businesses.
Yeah.
Mary's going to go – if she can go on the let's see how much we can bash Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of the good cop, bad cop thing.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, good podcaster, like, bad podcast.
Yeah, Mary can sit down with them and go, so will you drop all your lawsuits against open source projects? We want to know.
Yeah. So what about those 230-some patents? Whatever happened to that?
Right.
Yeah. Let's plan our strategy, boys.
Yeah. So but it might be interesting. The reality is we live in a world dominated by Microsoft. But Microsoft's also realizing the world is being taken over by Linux is why they're, you know, favoring it because, mm-hmm. well, that's how the world is changing. So yeah. it's an interesting time as always. So,
yeah.
Yes. And, you know, like the old Chinese proverb said, may you live in interesting times.
Yes.
Or was that the curse? One of the two. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we certainly are.
Well, the fact that they're running Linux, as Linus Torvalds has pointed out, once they start running your software, you're winning.
Yes, right. That is so true.
And they're reaching out to a Linux podcast to come talk. Well, so.
Yes, but they won't have truly won unless they've got some free BSD servers in there.
Well, it could happen. It could happen.
I am expecting it to.
Sachin Adel seems like an interesting guy. He may, that is maybe my... he's a closet BSD guy.
Mm. Well, you know, that would be... yeah, because, you know, the angle you could take is just tell them, you know, this is what Apple was built off from. So
yeah.
You need to
heard of Apple.
Yes, right. You need to be running this.
Back when they were
solid
relevant.
Server stuff.
Right.
So anyway, all right. Enough of the fantasizing.
All right.
What else do we get in the feedback area?
Brent emailed us. I don't know if you guys and our listeners out
long-time
there. Long-time
listeners
yeah.
will remember Brent. And when we used to have the Is It Alive segment mm-hmm. where I would research. That's the term I'm going to use. I would research Linux names or names of Linux distros. And then at the time, Matt was here with us. And Matt and Tony, then I would present it. And they had to determine, I think we did, what, about five or six per game mm-hmm. show. Yeah, we had little music, which I loved.
Yeah.
But anyway, we would then determine, or they would determine, whether it was a live Linux distro, meaning it was getting regular updates, or it was dead. And yeah. then we kind of veered off and did some other funny ones, whether it's a Linux distro or a name of a country or, you know, some crazy stuff.
Or a beer. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but it was fun and it kind of ran its course and we stopped. But one of those episodes was Brent. He had put together some stuff and we used that. So he was kind of wondering if we could resurrect that again. And I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, I could probably dig something out maybe one time.
I think that'd be fun. Or even if listeners wanted to send in for us and.
Yeah, so it was really a lot of fun. It was just kind of crazy. So is it alive or is it a – and then it was fill in the blank.
We haven't played it in so long, but I still remember the theme music we had for it.
Yeah, it sounded like a game. All right. So anyway, so thanks, Brent, for taking us down memory lane.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of listener feedback from – I don't think it was
– Heidi.
Well, there's Heidi. We'll get to that one in a second. But I'll bring up this one real quick. It's directed, I think, at me directly. But I actually really liked it, and I didn't see this before. Invoiceplane.com, and it's by Kevin Wisher. And he sent that. Yeah, he sent that over to me talking about open source invoicing. Now, I've looked a little bit into this, and this is what's neat to me about this. Our invoice platform is still supposed to be an open source project that I just have not gotten around to because the code is a complete disaster and there's lots of problems. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a solid developer yet for that. And not that I'm not looking. I just – every time someone looks at it going, that's a mess and it's beyond my scope. Like they come in with confidence. I show them the code and they're like, but then they're like, it works. I'm like, watch this. And they're like impressed with how fast it works. I'm like, exactly. I need something coded just as fast. But this came up called Invoice Plane. Now, what struck me about this is when I looked at the demo of it is how similar it is to what I run now. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen another system laid out the way ours does. It's structured very differently is the best way to describe it. It's invoiceplane.com. It is a self-hosted open source application for managing your quotes, invoices, and clients and payments. And it's kind of tailored a little bit towards my industry, mm-hmm. At least to me it is. So I'm going to do some playing with it because because it's so similar to mine, it actually wouldn't be a major transition other than importing all the data to changing it over. And so I may reach out to the developers. So actually, I was really excited when I seen it. I've never seen this before. And I have a few other ones bookmarked that are out there. And a lot of them have like those freemium service, like we're open source, but part of it's closed. And then you pay this extra money after you get 10 users. Mm-hmm. Like they've got kind of hybrid models. I understand they're looking for ways to monetize it. And this is a fork of one of them that got monetized by another guy, because he says, you know, they went to kind of a commercial route and closed it, and this one he wants to keep this open, and he's got a call for developers in the blog and things like that. But because it's so much already, it's already structured, already open source, already put together, I'm going to take a pretty serious look at it here and say, wow, that might be pretty neat, especially because it's laid out like ours.
It looks pretty
well, you know. So the learning curve
looks really, really bad too. That's people when I've shown screenshots are like, why are those colors? I'm like, they just are. All right. Ours was developed in 2007. We had listener feedback from Heidi. Let me pull up that first email from Heidi. So I have it here. Sorry. Because I opened up invoice thing and then I got lost and
that's right. While you're pulling it up, I'm just gonna a quick update on my computer fail. I was able to bring up a console, so I'm just manually redoing my update. So I'm pretty confident that when I reboot, I'm going to have a nice Plasma desktop.
All right.
You ready, Tom?
Yeah, I am ready now.
All right, you go ahead.
Yeah, no, Heidi had some concerns that we were talking a bit much about what they have in quotes as geek feminism. And I think it's because we mentioned Aurora and what was her last name?
She was Borealis.
Oh. Yeah, I know. Anyways, and I knew it just before I had this, because I had my notes. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we talked about that. Now, we don't really have an agenda, and I think that was they were saying, do you have an agenda towards this or that? I'm like, no.
Fun is our agenda.
Fun is our agenda, right. And spreading the love of open source.
That's right.
We're enthusiastic about open source products. And those people, you know, she was Valerie Aurora, I think that's her name. She was a keynote at the Ohio Linux Fest in 2015, and she talked about two different topics, which one of them was how she solved the Unix time issue and problems with some of the developer community. And what I had mentioned in the last show is that Linus kind of breaks some of the rules of getting along with people. He's not the most personable person. He does give people a lot of that. And her point was not towards, so to speak, feminism in it, but more about the fact that if you want more developers, you can't every time someone has a question, yell at them how they use brackets in a very mean way. You go, look, this is what you should be reading. You just redirect them to the right place, as opposed to a lot of people take their cues from Linus and go, I should rant like him. He's successful and he rants about things and calls people names. And he does. He does not call people out based on gender. There's no feminist. Somehow this person interpreted we were talking more of as a gender topic. You're like, no, we want to encourage more people in the ecosphere. We want to encourage more active developers.
That's right.
And if someone's just starting out in it, if you just tell them, you're stupid, go away, they go, oh, I thought I wanted to help here. Well, you should. Yeah, it's the RTFM and a little bit of that. And it's not that I'm worried about them getting hurt, their feelings. I'm more worried about them not wanting to join the community.
Instead of RTFM, it should be RTM.
Yeah, there you go. Read the manual.
There, we fixed it.
There we go. Just drop the F out of there.
Yeah.
So that was all. Just quickly wanted to address that we don't really have any agenda on any of that other than we're enthusiastic about open source. And the reality is the more open source developers you have and more people you have looking at code and contributing in some constructive way is going to be better for the overall Linux world. So that's all I have to say on that. Who else? Someone else had a feedback. Oh, This one was also directed they sent an email directly to me, but I will answer it as a question. They asked me if I – they asked if I – which episode I had done a business talk on, and I said I actually had not. I took mostly about starting a business on my YouTube channel, and I've mentioned it here. They had questions how I got started. It was an email from Shannon, so I sent them an email about a little bit of how I got started on business.
To check out your YouTube channel, right?
Yeah, check out my YouTube channel, and that's where I post most of that. I mentioned that I own a business here. I do talk about business things here, but I have not done an episode specifically on that topic. Okay. Of how I got started. So that's all that kind of was on there. So,
yeah.
Good. And
Mary fixed her computer.
Yes, that's right. While while you were talking, Tom, I want you to know I was paying attention, but I was multitasking, and I'm happy to say that I just redid my update and I am fixed.
Awesome.
Right. That's the beauties of, and I'm sure this would have happened on FreeBSD if I were in it right now. That's the beauties of Linux.
Awesome. Good job.
Yeah. Because I just, I got the console. Well, I logged into a console and got myself, you know, got logged in and bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That CLI. Love it.
Yeah. Much better than Windows 10. It's just, yes. Whenever it breaks, we're just like reload it.
Just, right.
What is it doing for 2 hours? It's, yeah, I don't know
what. It locks your computer so you can't do anything on it while it's doing it.
Well, you know why? It's because it's sending its upgrades to, or it's sending the telemetry data to Microsoft.
Yeah.
It's using all the bandwidth.
It's something like that.
Anyway.
Oops, I should say that.
Are we still invited at Build Conference? Yes. Maybe not after this episode.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I screwed it up for you. All right. So that's our listener feedback. So thank you, folks. Keep those cards and letters coming. Yeah.
Yes. We love hearing back
from you. That's right. That's right. And, you know, and you don't need to send us anything about last week's show. We know the audio was bad.
Yes.
So.
Still listen to it. We talked about PanelCon and great things.
Yeah, just grit your teeth. It's like, oh, it's only an hour.
Sorry about that. All right, so we're going to...
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I saw on there was really cool? Is there's an update for the OpenSense.
You know, I saw that, Tony, and I kind of thought of you. I thought of you guys because I thought, oh, those guys are going to comment on this. So I'm not going to.
All right. So OpenSense, if you guys don't remember us talking about it, is a fork of pfSense. So it's a BSD-based firewall operating system. And I'm running pfSense at home. And when I'm trying to rebuild a new one, and I'm running into issues with it. So I'm wondering if I try OpenSense, whether I'll run into the same problems.
No, you know, new issues.
Yeah, probably different issues.
It goes all the time.
You're such a pessimist, Tom. Or is it realist?
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always issues. In open sense, and I won't get too political with it, but there's a lot of debate about how it was forked and everything else.
Oh, really?
There's a whole backstory to it that I read, and I don't know who's right and who's wrong.
Whether it was forked in a nice way or
– It was not.
There you go. That's what I thought.
It was not. Well, the concept as I read it was basically they were upset because they had a hardware partner they wanted, and of course pfSense is partnered with Netgate. So they have – there's a symbiotic relationship there for, hey, look, we sell pre-configured devices. But the OpenSense is like, no, we want this to look better. And granted, when they forked it, the pfSense was in desperate need of a facelift in terms of UI design. But then again, it's a firewall. So how concerned are you about the UI? I really it's always, you know, function over form when it comes to that. But I will admit it's really pretty now because they did update pfSense. It does look a lot better now. Oh, side note errata about pfSense. I did do a video review.
Side note errata. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it.
I did a video review.
That's how professional we are, folks.
I have errata. I did a video review of the new pfSense little firewall. Spoiler alert, it sucked. Yeah. Not my video. My video was great, but.
Well, you didn't. Now, you said spoiler alert. You didn't give people enough time to plug their ears. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
we're very sorry.
The routing performance is actually really slow on it.
Really?
It, yeah, they put gigabit ports on there, but then it uses a Rockwell chip, a single core Rockwell, and does not have the power to actually route at high speed. And let's go a step further. It's also does not have the ability. It warns you when you open up the traffic shaper, you can't shape traffic on it. I'm like, wait a minute. The reasons people like pfSense are, one, it's fast, routing,
and
just traffic shaping. And they use a chipset doesn't support traffic shaping and are hoping to fix that in an update with software. And I'm like, why'd you release this?
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed.
Because they could.
I'll probably use it at my home. I mean, it's faster than my internet at home, but it does have – I think I was getting like 90 megs routing speed max on it. I mean, just – if you have a super fast internet connection, which obviously in corporate you wouldn't use this, but for home it's fine. I've got a – you know, I'm only using a 50 meg circuit at home, so I haven't exceeded it, but it's going to be obsolete soon.
Mm. Yeah. You know, I really see that as being a use case that somebody – like a business. Like you have clients that has people that want to – or has employees that go home and want to be able to connect in.
Yep.
Well, instead of having to manage a VPN on their PC, they could take one of these home, plug it into their home router, just plug a PC into that, and then they're all of a sudden on the network, like as if they are, you know, in the business.
Yeah. So it's got it does have some good use cases. It's really low power. It's small. It's pretty neat. So I did talk about its use cases. I was just disappointed in the routing speed and the traffic shaping because the number one. One of the biggest reasons we saw pfSense with a lot of clients is everybody's using VoIP phones and they need to have traffic shaping on there. So the fact that it doesn't support that, I'm like, that's a use case. We set up traffic shaping for everyone to solve all the problems of VoIP phones. Right. And not that there's really problems of VoIP phones other than if you don't have traffic shaping, you get really clippy calls.
Yeah.
So back to distros, Ghost BSD.
I saw that. You know, it is a development release, but – I knew when FreeBSD came out with 11.0 that Eric Turgeon and the team there were going to be coming out with the update for GhostBSD. So I do plan on putting that back on my laptop. So
all right,
you've been forewarned. There's once no, I do, there's going to be a lot of BSD love, FreeBSD love. So
all right,
hey, and you also saw Crux.
Yep.
Just today, as a matter of fact, Crux Linux.
Yeah, Crux Linux. Just, yeah.
You know why I like Crux?
Hmm. Why is that?
Because that was the distro where I compiled my kernel for the first and last time.
Yeah, once you've done that, you're like.
You know, compiling it was not really as. I mean, when you say, you know, I compile my own kernel, I mean, that sounds really, wow, you do? But then when you go through the process, it's a kind of a series of options and questions. You just have to kind of select what you want.
Yeah.
And then press the button.
Maybe I'm older. Maybe I'm lazy now. I don't know. Or I just have other things to work on. Mm-hmm. I'm happy I don't have to compile my kernel because this was a problem when I used to have to roll in drivers forever ago.
Sure. Yep.
So, you know, starting in my Red Hat days, which were, that would have been the 90s. I was 99, I think it's the last time I used Red Hat, 98. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Well,
yeah.
You know, if you've got a desktop and the kernel that you're using automatically has the Bluetooth drivers and has all sorts of other things that you don't want, you can just redo it without them.
Yeah.
I mean, you can. I can tell I've not convinced either one of you. But anyway, just
I've done it, and it reminds me of Gentoo. You know, I've done the build it yourself and not quite.
How did you emerge? How did you emerge from your experience? That's for people who don't know, Gentoo's their package system is
Emerge.
Is Emerge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gentoo is a very optimized distribution where you do tons of your own compiling, burn through many, many CPU cycles, compiling everything.
Yeah. But what was nice is that the laptop I was using had a Broadcom wireless chip. And all
did you say that was nice?
No, but what was nice about it is that it could just
that you were able to sell it to
mark.
Someone else.
No, I just put a little check mark saying compile in the Broadcom driver, and then it worked at first boot.
Oh.
Yeah, so I didn't have to go digging around.
Now you got me. I see a possible project on the horizon for that my Bemis laptop. You know, the one I'm always complaining about that has the Broadcom chip?
Oh, yeah.
Tony, I only complain about it because it's for the joke value.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I will, because I just got a message this morning about this from one of my IT friends asking about Linux distributions. Is I see the Uninvention corporate server UCCS.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a Debian based software distribution that features domain services that are compatible.
What was it based on?
Debian.
Okay.
One of these days I'll say things right.
Not much gets past me.
Yep. And this has been a thing, you know, and we talked about this earlier. Yeah. So Microsoft Active Directory integration is just not there because it's a reverse engineer protocol. But, you know, there is another distribution of that. Like I said, I'll be able to take a few minutes and try some of these. We have some Windows machines
that would be,
in our office.
You know, Tom, maybe down the road, that would be an interesting fresh looks.
Yeah. How do we authenticate Linux servers with Active Directory, and how does that work? And how does it work? I actually, one of the things I may have to do some reading on, because Windows 10 won't authenticate against really old versions of Microsoft Server. That's actually been a problem as you've progressed upwards with the desktop environments. The older server environments are no longer compatible. And so there's some companies that
even
don't
though they're fully patched.
Yeah, because some companies, Microsoft doesn't, once they drop support for it, they want you to get the new server.
Sure.
Actually, Server 2008, I think, is that's going to come up on end of life pretty soon too, I imagine.
Yeah, it'd probably run along the same with Windows 7.
Because Vista it's dropped.
2020. So.
2020, I bet.
Yeah, and Vista's dropping too. So.
Yeah, so we're, you know, 3 years away. And for businesses today, you know, that's not far, 3 years.
Well, and this is one of the aggravations. So one of my clients is running a Server 2008. Why are they running it? Because their enterprise software that runs their company, that's a very niche software for carpet management, manages like carpet sales in a corporate environment with a SQL Server, would not run on 2012. They said, you can't buy it. So even though the server they got after 2012, it was only compatible with Server 2008, and they had to upgrade, so their server was dying.
Wow.
So now they're going to have to go through the upgrade cycle again, which is painful and expensive. Or we can reload that computer with Server 2012, but there's not like an in-place upgrade. So it's resetting up their domain. It's a lot of money.
Well, yeah.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
It is. Time and materials.
Or they could just run Linux. Because I still love that my Debian mail server still runs to this day with in-place upgrades for, I think, over 11 or 12 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's amazing.
It's been the same virtualized system forever.
Wow. Now, and that's not a rolling is that rolling release, or is that just it's just a standard.
Yeah.
But you're able to perform in place upgrades.
It's amazing. I love it. I love it.
I would too. That's fantastic.
It just works. It makes me happy. Yeah. I broke things on it, I mean, because I did
sure,
things.
Sure.
But it gave me warnings before I broke them, so. All right.
Ground control to Major Tom. You're about to break something.
I'm about to break stuff. Bodhi has a release. Mint has a release. So there's plenty of. Mm-hmm.
And the Neth server, Mary, was.
That Neth server's on it. That's what I was referring to earlier with their claim that you can completely replace Microsoft Active Directory with their product. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be interesting. The other one I'm going to note on there, too, is because they've had a second pre-production release is Nutex, which is on there. And I mentioned that because in our next episode, I'll be taking a look at that.
Okay.
What was interesting about it is that it is not based on Ubuntu. I thought, yay. They actually built it from Linux from scratch.
Mm.
And so I thought, well, this warrants a look. Even though it's this latest version isn't production, it's still in development. I felt it was sufficiently along.
I like that now that we're into February that there's so many more distro updates, because we were kind of like struggling for it. Like there's like, oh, nothing interesting happened because it was the holidays.
Oh, yeah. People are recovering from it. Now things are starting to crank out.
Yes.
So
except for any Chinese distributions are devoid on here because they're still winding down from the celebration that is the Chinese New Year.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Good point, Tom.
Yeah. They're all offset from us.
That's right.
All right.
Well, I guess anything you want to add there, Mr. T?
That's all I had.
That's both of you, Tony.
That's all I had.
All right.
Tech news and views.
All right.
Who wants to start with the news?
You.
Me?
Yeah, because if you start, Tom, then I can just say, oh, you covered all my stories.
Yes. So I'll post a link to this in the show notes, but this one made me laugh, and I think it'll tickle everyone's geek humor. Is there's a I'm on Reddit a lot, maybe too much, but
well, you know, the first step is admitting you have a problem.
Admitting I have a problem, and I'm doubling down on it. So someone started in one of the sysadmin things, and the humor is wonderful. Is Terminator was a cautionary tale about testing software thoroughly before pushing it into production. So it turns into people debating about different methodologies and geekdom and sysadmin of how you could administer a bunch of Terminators, how many of them would have broken Wi-Fi drivers, and how many of them would just BSOD and just stop functioning.
Yeah.
And why it's better to have robots programming robots. And it turns into a lot of that. It also then forks off, at least at one point, into talking about Star Wars and saying Star Wars is actually a cautionary tale about encrypting all data at rest. So there's like so many sysadmins with lessons in here with geek references that it made me happy. And it's fun to read.
All right.
So that's what I'll kick the news off with. Oh, and hopefully in the security news, we'll start with hope no one was thinking Arby's because Arby's wasn't thinking about security.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And for you, for those outside the U.S., you know, I'm thinking Arby's was their slogan for quite a while and probably still is. I don't know. I don't watch many commercials.
No, Arby's, we got the meats.
Well, that's right. That's their current one. Their other old one was Arby's.
But we didn't have the securities.
We did not have the securities. Krebs on Security has a whole write-up on this. And
I haven't seen their commercials recently. They're probably trying to lie low. I hate that. Well, I hate that theme. They got to get a new one.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
I'm practically vegetarian.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. And it's like there's not an incentive for these companies to push security because the only thing Arby's did was join the ranks of Wendy's, join the ranks of Target, and all these other major companies that have had security breaches. Once again, it doesn't cost them anything, so to speak, other than reputation. But is your reputation damaged when everyone else happens and everyone goes, yeah, everyone else get caught? Well, you did too.
You know, that's a good that's an interesting idea,
Tom. It's not brand damaging anymore.
Because then it becomes kind of the norm.
It is.
And so then,
I feel as though it's really becoming the norm, actually. And because there's not any real financial incentive for them to do so, and I always laugh because people are like, oh, PCI compliance. I'm like, yeah, they were PCI compliant. They probably didn't care about security. They don't have any details of how the breach occurred other than that the breach occurred. And we often don't get a lot of the details. But the other side of this, too, is this happens at smaller companies every day. And you don't hear about it because they're just not a big enough brand to make it noteworthy or newsworthy. So
to make Krebs list.
they don't make Krebs list. But yeah, nonetheless, it's something that needs there's definitely some concern over. So did you hear open source is a word in the dictionary now?
No,
I missed that one.
Yes.
I can't believe I missed that.
We are in the dictionary. No comment from Microsoft yet on this. But we're here. That's why they're inviting. They're like, oh, crap, they're in the dictionary. Invite those guys over to our build conference. So there's also an Indiegogo campaign. This is pretty cool. So Elementary OS wants an app store, and they don't just want any app store. They have an Indiegogo campaign. They want a pay-as-you-go app store, pay-what-you-want app store. And I think this is a wonderful concept because you're always not sure how to donate directly to an open source project that you like. So you can go, hey, I'm going to go download this thing out of my app store and I'm going to add this feature or, you know, load Caden Live or whatever. And I've donated to projects and I donate to Caden Live because, well, I use it all the time and I do videos about it and it's how I do all my editing. But kind of a cool pay-as-you-go concept where let's say I put – and I'm not – I didn't read through every piece of the detail of what they're trying to do. But the concept is if you have an app you like, you can get it for free, or you can say throw money at this project, and it's a way for you to help fund projects there. So they've got a, you know, got a Indiegogo campaign going for that. We'll link in the show notes. KDE Plasma leaning towards focusing on Flatpak versus the app image snaps, and they said for developments they want to because they focusing all three is a big deal, so they want to narrow it down to one.
You really did take one of my news items, yes. Because there was this morning when I was doing some last-minute research, I came across a blog post that talked about that. And what the guy did on his blog post, Tom, is he took and he compared various – and he's actually a KDE developer, but he had compared various distros to see where each was relative to the latest version of – I think it was Snap or Snappy, whatever – and then Flatpak, and it was very interesting from that perspective because it looked like the latest version of Flat seemed to be available for most of the distros versus Snap.
And I've had actually some really big troubles with Snap, and one of them was this, and this is what confused me because I'm using EcryptFS, so I encrypt all my stuff, and that causes problems with Snap, and I'm like, how do you guys have problems with encrypted? If I ran two computers.
Because they can't decrypt it and send the stuff to somebody.
Well, no, it has trouble figuring out where my home drive is. That's literally the problem. Like, you have to go and start manually editing things when you install some software because it goes, I don't understand your home drive because it's encrypted and it uses symbolic links to decrypt.
Oh.
If you ever looked, there's actually your home directory. If you looked at it from like to see a third party boot off of Linux, mm-hmm. you'll see that your home directory is gobbledygook of eCryptFS.
Yeah.
And then they create essentially like a symbolic link, you know, username Tony or Tom or whatever. And that apparently that causes problems with the snappack. I'm like, hold on, Ubuntu developed it and Ubuntu has a problem with it. Like, it's not just good. Don't encrypt anything. Just there you go. That's how you solve a problem. Oh, I don't get it.
That's what I do.
I don't. I mean, I think they may have solved it, but it was an aggravation when I tried to run some Snap things that I wanted to try. It just kept failing and giving me all kinds of errors. Like, you're not logged in. I'm like, well, I am logged in because I had to log in and validate. And that became a confusing part too, because it wouldn't log in and validate through anything but the command line. It wouldn't set the snap store properly. And it turned out all of my problems, everyone in the forums had the bug reports for it, were, oh, yeah, it's because you're running encrypted. So I spun up another Ubuntu unencrypted as a test, logged in, boom, worked right away with no errors at all. And I'm like, how can you not solve – you guys put the encryption together. I'm not using some weird third-party thing that's hard to understand. I'm using the Ubuntu encryption. So, yeah.
Yeah, darn it.
Darn it. HVAC-focused I/O device runs OpenWRT. This is pretty cool. So this is a HVAC controller, and this is there's a cool website I found too called linuxgizmos.com, and it's basically all kinds of IoT devices that run Linux, but they're taking a different approach. So a lot of the IoT devices are embedded from some mass manufacturer and often responsible for poor security and duplicated SSH keys, as we've talked about before. This company says, no, we're not in the software development world. They're an HVAC company to make commercial HVAC products to control furnaces and, you know, heating control systems in a running OpenWRT. They're like, we're not going to deal with the security. We're just going to run an open source project and run that on the device itself. So it's open, it's extensible, and hopefully more secure and give people control. And, of course, that openness is wonderful for IoT devices. So I think that's where we kind of got to go towards. The company's realizing they may be good at making a thing, but they're not good at Linux. They're not good at this. And buying some third-party embedded controller and just gluing it to your box and hoping that company did it securely is how we ended up with the IoT nightmare that we have, that's all these botnets that are attacking things. So, yeah. Thought that was kind of clever,
pretty
though.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, security's hard, and having these companies try to do it. Now, hopefully Tony doesn't have any problems with this, because I know they run a lot of Cisco stuff, but it turns out it's more than Cisco affected by this. You already know where I'm going.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
The Intel Atom C2000 chips apparently don't last. They weren't built as robustly. I like that's what Intel said.
Yeah. And so what and where Cisco comes in on this is that they built a lot of their lower end equipment. And I say lower end compared to their normal high-end or enterprise equipment, that the Meraki equipment is like cloud-based. It's like more small business Cisco equipment, and some of their lower-end routers is based on an Atom processor now instead of you know, what they previously used to use. And there's a lead or something right in the processor that will burn out the clock on it. So after a year and a half, your router will just no longer boot.
Yes.
And that can be a problem.
Now, and this affects the Linux world dramatically too. So before we ha-ha Cisco at all, one, it's Intel's fault, not Cisco. Two, it turns out companies that are popular in the Linux world, like pfSense / Netgate, they used Intel Atoms too. Mm-hmm. So it's their basis on that Intel Atom processor. Anything that's built on that 2000 series processor, you need to think about and look at your inventory and go, should I have this here? Is this one of the affected models? Was it bought between these dates? And exactly. Yeah, be aware. It's just a matter of being aware. Arch dropped 32-bit. People are still using 32-bit in other news.
I was going to say.
Well, you know, that computer I talked about earlier and possibly using it as own cloud.
Oh, yeah.
32-bit.
Sure?
There's
64-bit support has been around for a while now.
No,
a
long it's time. Trust me, it's 32-bit.
Okay.
It's about – that computer's about 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And I got a brand new motherboard for it, so it's not like I'm going to be letting go of 32-bit. But there's a fair number of distros that will roll either way. But it sounds like Arch isn't one of them.
Just about anything that's dual core and newer – will be 64-bit.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, not so if this. You have, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, in related directly to me talking about Tails Linux, The demo I did was on Tails 3, which is in beta right now, mm-hmm. Which ran really smooth, but it's also 64-bit. When Tails was notoriously only available in 32, because they wanted to make sure it supported older hardware and things like that. But I think they're realizing there's just not enough for their user base. It's not – people are just – you know, computers are really, really inexpensive right now, mm-hmm. and everything's 64-bit. So I
– Makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense to drop it. We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago about, you know, people like, oh, you can just use Linux to revive an old computer. I said, well, not really. You know, the problem is you try and open up any modern website. If you don't have enough horsepower under a hood to render that page, what are you going to do with it? Is it a good word processor at 32-bit? Sure. Is that what people want to use a computer for? Not really.
Right.
You know, and at what point does the old computer use so many watts of power when you look at that? I was laughing. We were looking at some of the old servers. One of my clients, he has them like, I don't know why. They just haven't thrown them out. They just like them there. Mm-hmm. But they have like the old tape drive servers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients has a RAID array from the 80s still in their building, still cow. Not in use, you know, but it's off to the side because they have a big building. And they just rolled it off to the side of the server room. And I got to find a picture of it sometime. Mm-hmm. Next time I'm down there, I'll take one. But it plugged into – each one of the arrays plugs into a 220 line.
Holy cow.
Because I mean, that's what it took to fire this thing up.
I mean, wow, just, that's a lot of power.
Yeah. So we've gotten so much more efficient and things like that. You'll save on electricity just by using these newer modern computers because they use less wattage. And you'll save your sanity by having a faster computer. Mm-hmm. Now, this is – I always like to bring up a little bit of gaming news in Linux because I do play games once in a while. Crow Team says – they're going to port all the Serious Sam games over to Linux using the new Vulkan drivers. And that's pretty relevant because that always is the holdout for a lot of people playing that would love to use Linux is they go, I would love to, but my games, and they have a valid argument. I still have a Windows machine. It's the only Windows machine I have is the one the kids are using for gaming at home because most of the games are super difficult to even get running on there. But every day we see more and more companies move over because, well, gamers aren't thrilled with Windows 10, but it's what they have and that they need it to work. So, and the Serious Sam games are so much fun and I'm excited they're coming to Linux, but there are they're just great shoot 'em up, give you lots of bullets games.
Oh, yeah. So, my favorite. Yeah. Oh, man. If you can't have a good shoot 'em up
you
game.
You got to have a good shoot 'em up. So this is actually, to me, a great shoot 'em up game. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of different versions of it, and they're going to port all the old versions, too, not just new forward. So I thought that was kind of cool. But that's the nice thing. More and more of these companies are bringing it all over to the Linux world. So.
Right.
Well, that's what I had for the news. You guys can go.
You took all mine. Oh. No, seriously. You know, you only really just took one. One item I have, you know, we talked about. I think we mentioned Bitcoin earlier in the in the episode, and there was an article that came out this past week that apparently China has you can't withdraw your Bitcoins, or they put some pretty big restrictions on withdrawing Bitcoins because. What was happening is that the exchanges in China, they were allowing people to make free trades. So I guess you'd call it a free trade zone. But anyway, and so what was happening then? They had pretty much, I think, 85% of the Bitcoin market or Bitcoin trading was done by them. So what they did is they prevent withdrawals. Now it's plummeted to 20%. So I guess we'll see where that goes. But that kind of caught my eye.
Well, they're also banning firewall VPNs in China. You can only have government-approved VPNs, too. Yeah,
which means it's heavily backdoored.
Yes.
That doesn't surprise me.
A lot of U.S. companies are pretty nervous about that because generally when they travel over there, they always use a VPN. So they got to figure out how that rule applies to U.S. nationals that are visiting there.
Well, I have a VPN on this.
Mm-hmm.
So
are you going to China?
No.
Okay.
No, but I should put that on my bucket list.
I don't know. Better watch that VPN, though. I'm just saying.
It's my Opera VPN. But, yeah, okay. No, that's a good point. There was that little bit that I had. I've got some KDE Corner updates since my Dropbox is also fixed, by the way. So it must have been the massive syncing it was doing. And I just went in there after I fixed my computer problem by rerunning the update. Bingo, everything fell into place like I knew it would.
Yeah. I love when you can just abdicate yourself into success.
That's you know, one time that it took me something had happened. I can't remember. It was about a year or 2 years ago. It took, I think, two or three apt-get upgrades. Just I ran it. Still, I could tell that it was starting to come back. I ran it again. And then finally the third time, bingo, I was good to go. Yep.
Apt-get-f and let it fly.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I do that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, it takes care of what ails you or what ails your system.
Yeah. So. Which, if it ails my system, it ails me.
Yeah. That's for sure. That's
Can
for
I
sure.
have a working computer?
Yeah. So, Tony.
I did find a couple. I remember running across a post this week, and I'm trying to find it on, it was a Google Plus. I thought Kevin Wish had posted it, but maybe somebody else did.
Okay.
And it was about opensource.com, I think it was running a what podcast do you listen to?
Oh.
And we had four people that gave us that's what they vote for.
Yay.
Who are we up against? That's what counts.
Like, I think there's 10 different podcasts. It was
they were
like
cooking
Last
ones, were they?
And yeah. No. Linux Action Show.
Oh, yeah, they probably got a lot.
Free open or what's the Twit open source or
I know what you're talking about. Honestly, I don't listen to it, but
Floss Weekly.
Floss Weekly.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
And then there was
They cover projects. So
I'll listen
I listen to them based on what project they are if I have an interest in it.
I do too. Yep.
That's
And Tilt was on there and a couple other things and it was neat.
Good.
That's who it wasn't Kevin Wisher. It was one of the Totes guys posted it. But anyway, so that was neat to see that we made one of those lists.
Mm-hmm. We're on a list.
Yeah, we had something like
23%
of
that.
The viewing audience or whatever. That was, obviously that was
all right.
Voting on there.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Anyway, so my next one I found was the Skype Linux app will stop working on March 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. I read that, too.
Well, according to OMG.
Hey, when is that trip out to Washington?
May. It's all the way into May.
I'll go out.
There's a topic.
I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to have my Linux let. I'm going to say, Skype is just not working for me anymore. Why is it?
They're moving over to a WebRTC system. I don't know exactly where they're at with it because I got rid of Skype. I still have an account, but I quit really using it when Microsoft bought them however many years ago that was because I kind of expected the support to get worse. And it wasn't wonderful to begin
with. You weren't disappointed?
I was not surprised. what's even funnier? Who else Skype support's really bad for? Windows Phone users.
Oh, yeah?
Because Microsoft had this idea. Let's integrate Skype into the Windows Phone kernel itself. Which means as an app, it updates on Android. As an app, it updates on iPhone. But as an integrated kernel, it only updates under major upgrades.
Oh.
So the features that were coming out for Skype as they added features, apparently the Windows users were super upset because they didn't get them.
<That's>
And Microsoft admitted it was kind of they just couldn't fix it. They said, we have to redeploy images of the entire OS based on it because every phone model has to have its own image. So they actually had to rebuild images for every Windows phone in order to get updated version of Skype because they chose to integrate it as part of the OS.
Jeez.
Yeah. How's that going for you? Integrating everything as an OS, Microsoft.
Yeah, really.
So I thought that was actually funny that they got left in the dark. And of course, so did us Linux folks. But there's so many better things out there now. And Microsoft, since they decentralized Skype, because Skype was a peer-to-peer protocol. That's why it was so successful. It was decentralized without a server. And each node, if you had a lot of bandwidth and running Skype, you acted as a super node to help relay the other Skype traffic. So it worked in concert with each other. Really interesting protocol, really interesting design, really clever. But in the end, when Microsoft centralized it down to certain servers, and then they got caught spying.
Right.
That didn't help any at all. So, and that part of it is they want total control. They want to spy it. They want to integrate it into their enterprise application. So I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, and then there's probably the ad component.
I don't even know where they're going with that. So,
I'm sure on that trip you'll find out.
What do you mean ad component?
Well, the advertising.
I mean,
they're targeted, so they kind of monitor what you do, so they know what to serve up for you.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So
yeah. That's why Cortana's useless. They're not doing a good job of that either.
Hey, I wanted to really compartmentalize stuff where, you know, you got a virtual machine that just does this and you have another virtual machine, which then led me to the question, and Tom, you probably know the answer. Tony, you might too, actually. VirtualBox. Can you have more than one virtual machine open in VirtualBox?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. I have.
Yeah. They can operate them all headlessly.
Yeah.
Yes.
There we go. Okay.
It works.
Yeah. Hey, I might have a.
That's actually how I run mine at home. I have my desktop computer. I actually took it off my desktop.
I've done one.
I've
just shoved
it in the corner.
Okay.
In the corner of my basement. And I use the VirtualBox, PHP VirtualBox, you know, the web GUI for it.
And I love PHP VirtualBox.
Everything is remote.
I've never used it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's a little bit, it's extra work to set it up than.
Okay.
Is
it documented?
If you break networking on the guest, you know, on your VM,
sure.
Then you can connect in through the host through the web GUI. So just
and
as if you're sitting right in front of the machine and fix it.
There's even this guy who has a YouTube channel that made a video on how to set it up.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and how it works.
Okay, I'll have to search the YouTubes for that.
Yeah, look for the YouTubes for that.
Okay. I wonder. I might even know that guy.
Yeah. And I don't know if I left this in my video, but pro tip, don't run it as root. You know why? Because it'll fail miserably because it has to run as a user. Yeah. Tom tried to get to run as root and couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. Turns out they have a lot of safeties in there to keep me from being stupid. So I just tried to make it work.
Protect you from yourself. Yeah.
Then I added a user and
I don't
ran
consider
it as a user.
Stupid.
It works perfectly fine.
Yeah, so, that's what the how I set it up was – by a separate user. So the only glitch is if I download an ISO, I have to move the ISO over to either a shared location or into their home directory for it to be able to pick it up and create a new VM.
Yeah. So there's little things like that. Yeah, same problems.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, backup scripts I wrote for it and everything else. It works really, really well for that because it allows me to create snapshots of all of our critical systems are running on it. So we've got it, you know, nice backups and snapshots and all that all fancy right. stuff. So.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, great. So, Tony, any more news from you?
Actually, I did find one more.
That's what you were doing over there.
Well, right, actually, I heard about this the other day, and I had to look up the article for it.
Okay.
I listened to the Sans Internet Storm podcast, and basically it's just a 10-minute podcast about – or daily podcast about new viruses and malware stuff that's happening. Oh.
I've
and not
heard
specifically
that,
but so they mentioned one of them about another problem with Netgear routers. So we talked one about, I don't know, a month or two back where like a phishing attack or something could get you to click on a link and it'll actually open up ports in your router or run commands against your router from the inside. And you don't even think about it because it's just a link you click on.
Right.
But it's actually running commands. Well, now there's a new one that if you're able to hit the web interface, so if you have remote administration turned on, this would affect that, which they said there's close to 20,000 that has remote administration turned on of just Netgear routers. And then there's a few other products that use the Netgear firmware. But what it is, you can get admin credentials without actually authenticating in. That if you
– All right.
Yeah. And what he does, he created his own script, that Python script that would find it.
The guy who hacked it, did you read why he hacked it?
He couldn't. Yeah, it was because he was over at a friend's house or somewhere, and he couldn't. He didn't want to walk downstairs and reset the modem.
So he wrote a script to reset the modem and hack. He hacked a Netgear router based on that. And it turned into a total security fiasco.
He couldn't remember the password. So he tried to hack it to see if there's a vulnerability, and he found one just because he didn't want to get up from his third bedroom or third floor bedroom to walk to the basement to reset it.
Driving invention of things.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
The backstory was funny.
Yeah.
That is funny.
But what it does is so when you type the password in so many times, it comes up to the page of unauth.cgi, and it tells you that you can't there's a thing here. It says, access to this resource is denied. Your client has not supplied the correct authentication. So basically, your username and password is wrong. And then it says it posts to action, which is the unauth CGI and this ID number, Well, he thought, I wonder if I run that ID number against the password reset page, which is passwordrecovery.cgi. And then it just gives you the username and password in plain text right in the web page.
Then, and this is why the Federal Trade Commission is after the folks over at Netgear for putting the word security on any of their products.
Right.
That's actually what the suit is against them. And his
if
story
they're claiming they're secure and they're not
claiming. Oh yeah, by far. And also one of the besides the fun part of him not wanting to get out of bed and hacking it, he goes into detail on how he had to fight with them to try to get them to respond at all. So he tried doing proper responsible disclosure of the vulnerabilities, and Netgear was completely unresponsive. Basically, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not concerned with it. So
finally, I think when they finally responded, they said it was only against a certain amount of routers, and it was like four times that.
Yeah. They denied the scale of it.
They didn't test properly.
No, they did not test. Basically, they let us know they don't care about security.
Right.
So don't buy Netgear. Not if you care about security.
Right. So as I say, everything, if you're going to test against something like this, do it on your own router. It actually is illegal to do it against somebody else's routers.
He definitely broke his law, you know, his friend's house.
Right.
Might not want to go downstairs.
But anyway, so that'd be kind of – I'm trying to look around to see if I know somebody that has one of these, get their permission, of course, and see if I can crack their password like that. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Couldn't you just war drive and – I mean, wouldn't there be a –
Tony could go around breaking the law. He absolutely
right. No. I'm speaking in the hypothetical. Couldn't someone? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use the word you. But
well,
couldn't someone just war drive and take a look at the footprint or the pattern of these?
Well, there's a few things you'd have to get past.
What's
versus
their default? I mean, what channel are they default on? And then that would tell you if somebody's not if somebody's not changing that, they're certainly not going to change the default channel.
Right.
So,
well, if the default password or if the SSID is not a password protected or encrypted,
you don't need to go.
Then
all that.
You wouldn't be able to get in easily. You'd have to crack the.
There's a distro for that.
Authentication there, right?
When you said war drive, you made me think of something. So one of my friends who will remain unnamed, a hacker friend, I love what he did. Remember years and years ago, we had antennas on our roof to get TV, and we had a little knob we spun, and it spun the antenna around on top of the TV?
No, we didn't have that. My parents made us kids go outside and turn it.
Oh, okay.
This was pre-
Different generations.
Yeah.
You know, the fancier places, we had a knob you turned and it used to move the antenna. Well,
yeah.
That was still on my friend's roof of his house. And of course, we don't really use that. But what he did do is climb up there because he didn't want to go war driving because that was too much trouble. So he put a directional Wi-Fi antenna on there to point at different people's houses all around his neighborhood.
Really?
And he can turn and point directionally at places so he can get Wi-Fi from different locations.
Talk about anonymity.
Yeah. So he's like, you just turn the knob and I can get this guy's Wi-Fi when I turn it to the east and this one to the west. I was just awesome. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, this is.
Well, now he picks it up. He doesn't get in it, does he?
I'm not going to go into detail.
Oh, okay.
But
no need to.
He keeps me entertained.
Oh, my goodness.
He also is known for letting people know. There's a great story, and also on Melissa Simon Reddit. I don't have a link to it right now, but it was how I got a free printer. And the guy basically connected to someone's open Wi-Fi because he's seen a box in her front yard. You see him carrying in a new printer. So then he's like, oh, this looks like fun because my neighbor doesn't know about technology. So he jumped on her Wi-Fi and then he says, I own your printer. And sent a series of, you know, things back and forth. And the next day the printer was out front and he went and picked it up and he took pictures of it. He's like, neighbor going in the house because he had like security camera with new printer. He goes, me owning printer. And he even had the printouts that he did. They were stuck inside the printer still when the neighbor threw out the printer and put it out front. And he goes, got free printer out of garbage.
Holy cow.
Oh, my goodness.
I laughed so hard when I seen it. I think it's been floating around Twitter now, too. So
Yeah,
that reminds me years ago, my next door neighbor didn't secure their Wi-Fi. I jumped on it all the time. Well, not on purpose most of the time, but I did once when my internet went down. But yeah, nowadays I think most people are pretty good about securing stuff.
Well, there was a massive hack of printers, and because someone pointed out that port 9100, it's open and it's no one changes default on the printer protocols, no one really ever changes the default logins for that. Mm-hmm. So HP printers, port 9100 is open. You can telnet into most HP printers and just take over them. All these commercial printers that are available at things like hospitals or anywhere. And it's amazing. If you use Nmap, even connecting to open Wi-Fis at hospitals, it has been shocking to me how many of them are there. Matter of fact, I was at a resort. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how many port 9100s are open.
Yeah.
I did not connect to them. I did not do anything bad. I'm just saying there's a lot of them mm-hmm. open.
Although, you know, sometimes hotels and resorts will have the business, the center that you can go and work in and print to. Mm-hmm. So they might have purposely set that on the guest network.
You would hope.
You would hope, yeah. Well, I mean, the last hotel I was at, that's what they did.
We will say that these ones are not. They were labeled at wonderful names like Front Desk 1, Front Desk 2.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Because
they
well,
didn't even have a business center there.
All right. No. Well, just another example of bad habits.
Right. Yes.
All right. Oh, you know, are you done with your stories?
Well, talking about cracking into printers.
Oh,
actually, there's the Last Security Now podcast. They were talking about that. Yep. What is it called? The Traitor Among Us? Is that what it was called?
Yes.
Or something like that?
And it's a really interesting point. So and maybe Tony's thinking about how they handle this at a hospital, but a lot of people don't realize is computers are now – the printers have a full-blown computer inside there. Mm-hmm. And I love the guy who put Doom on a HP printer on a little display screen on there. I mean, there's a lot of horsepower in there. Yeah. The Traitor Among Us story was basically that printers can be commandeered, and once again, they've lacked security. You can log into them and catch them on local networks. And from there, once you've sabotaged them, a lot of them are hard-lined in to places. So now that becomes a point of attack, and not all IT companies that are running around, you know, doing endpoint security on devices that connect to their networks, such as the computers, where they realize that's probably the largest threat, but they can overlook the printer. That if someone commandeers the printer and compromises it as a listening device because it runs, an operating system on it, and that operating system can be compromised, that all of a sudden that is the point of attack vector inside of your network. And a lot of them are dual homed, as in they have a LAN side and a Wi-Fi side. Mm-hmm. So if the Wi-Fi side is not secured and someone connects to it, you now are inside of the corporate network off of a printer and able to do your whatevers.
Exactly. Yeah, we and where I work is the hospital. We have some policies that specifically say if it's going to be plugged into a PC, you know, like one of the Jet, the Desk Pros that are wireless and USB, that we the policies turn off wireless. Or if it's a network based printer, the policy is that no USB get PCs plug into it.
Yeah.
So. So we've gone some steps at that, but it's not completely secure.
And it's harder to lock down because on a lot of those HP printers, there's not any way to admin lock down the menus on there. So someone could just press the button and turn Wi-Fi on because they go, I don't know why it ain't working. I'm going to mash buttons until it comes on. And I've noticed that like HP setup is a really common Wi-Fi that's open. And the printer's working. But what happens is it's the Wi-Fi part that's not being set up. And then it's offering you a bridge into their network at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's why my HP printer is hardwired. The wireless wasn't working that well anyway.
So yeah, and that's what everybody out there. If you are not using the wireless on your printer, shut it off.
Yep. Yeah, or go like Tom does. I'm running HP 2100s at my office. We have three of them. Those were made in 1999, by the way, and they still print.
Yeah, wow, yeah. No, I tell you, I love HP printers.
Yep. I like old HP printers. New ones, I could.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they can. I just want to reenact an episode. What is that? Office Space, and just smash them with a hammer.
I fully expect to see that as a Facebook video.
Yes. Well, we do have one of blowing up Adele. So
yeah.
Right.
We show fireworks.
Blowing up Adele. Not the singer.
Not
no.
The singer. No.
Oh, okay. That was a preposition. I got you.
Yes. We retired Adele with fireworks. Because, you know, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Well, we I don't know what was the start of that conversation. That was a story of yours, Tony.
It went on from one to one. Yeah,
printers. Yeah, that was. Hey, I wanted to mention. I don't know if you guys saw this, but did you see that Valve is killing? They're killing that Steam Greenlight, which was apparently a method for upvoting games. Hmm. And well, as these things typically do, It was gamed, no pun intended,
yeah,
by the users or developers, and they were voting for each other, and it just was a mess. So this coming spring, they're going to be rolling out Steam Direct, which I think is going to fix those problems. So
that's always a tricky part, to try and find out what game is good, what game you like. And sometimes you just got to read the reviews.
Yeah.
This is one of the things I like about YouTube, is I can actually see the gameplay and go, mm-hmm, is that a game I like?
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
That's a great way to evaluate games.
That to me is the best way to do it, because mm-hmm, I can't read the reviews and even understand it, because they're written to get you excited about the game, but I need to really know, will this game work? There was a shoot 'em up game that I thought was, I can't remember the name of it. You couldn't jump in it. I thought that was like the most absurd thing. So it's a first person shooter that there's no jumping ability.
What?
And like everyone complained about, like, you know how annoying it's, like I'm mashing my space bar, because it seems like you could, but you're supposed to do things like grapple hook over stuff. And it's like, but it's like, what a game flaw. Someone thought this was a clever idea not to be able to do it, but you're like, this is, it actually makes it very annoying because you can't get up on top of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way they wrote the game. And huh. It's hard to overcome that little flaw.
I hope they made no money on it.
Yeah. And it doesn't even mention it, of course, in the title. It looks good. The graphics are amazing. And
yeah.
But why do you limit the ability to jump? Like, I want to jump.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. You know, for this the Steam Direct, what they're going to require developers to do now is they're going to have to submit paperwork, verify their personal and company information, supply tax documents. You know, essentially, as if you were applying for a bank account, you're going to have to demonstrate that you're legit. And then that way, I guess it's going to
– that probably makes sense.
You know, rid a lot of chaff stuff out of there. So, yeah, and I think so. But anyway, so they said that green light had become a dumping ground for poor games and shoddy work. That was what some people were saying. Hey, by the way, too, did you see – this is not open source directly, but I'm sure there are open source tools that measure this – that we may be in the early stages of magnetic pole reversal.
Ooh.
Mm.
This was in Extreme Tech, and they said that it's not going to be a huge issue. You know, as far as like a world end of the world issue, not really. But
end of compasses, though.
Yeah.
compass.
Yeah, they said it's not going to be one of those end of the world articles. But if the poles do flip, we could be in for some electromagnetically interesting times.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, they deflect electrons, which could change how electricity behaves in the subtle level. So
all floppy disks are finally going to stop working.
Yeah, they said the inconsistencies in the planet's magnetosphere, and it's really interesting. It's not as cut and dry when based on some of these simulations of NASA as you think. But they said due to the inconsistencies, it could kneecap satellite observations and act like a poltergeist in computerized systems.
Mm.
So the ghost in the machine, it may come to life.
Ghost in the shell. Oh,
but yeah. I thought we were, you know, Elon said we're all running on a simulation, so this whole life might be real. So this is just somebody tweaking a variable.
Yeah.
We're all inside the matrix.
So they said, they end the article, it's kind of funny. They end the article with tinfoil is electrically conductive, though, so make sure that you keep your head well grounded. If you shape the foil right, it'll act like a Faraday cage around your skull and keep the polarity switch from frying your brain. So there's a solution.
There's a solution.
So anyway, all right, that was a couple of little things I wanted to add at the end there.
I think science is relevant, because I think there's a lot of mm-hmm. – there's probably a cross-section of people who I like Linux and I like science. I bet there's a Venn diagram, but those people are all in.
Oh, yeah.
Giant crossover for all
that. Yeah, that'd be a crazy-looking Venn diagram, I'll tell you. Hey, you know, I'm going to – pop over. Do you have any security stuff, Tony? Did you kind of talk about it already?
I already talked about it.
All right. I have one little item, a couple little items from KDE Corner. I think we mentioned earlier in the episode that Kden Live just came out with a maintenance release yesterday, or at least within the last couple of days. But there is something called Plasma Vaults, and this is being worked on by a developer from the KDE team. And what's kind of nice about this is that you know, when you install or upgrade, or actually install Linux or whatever, you have an opportunity to encrypt your whole partition. Well, what this does, and they said, you know, that's great for times when you've got your computer off and somebody's going to try to get into it. It's encrypted. They can't really access it, hopefully. What's great about this is that there may be times when you need to give somebody access to your computer to do stuff, but you want to keep some other information inaccessible. And so this is just essentially allows you to encrypt directories and creates a little vault for it. So that's in the works. Yeah, so that's in the works. And, they're saying it doesn't mean that it will make your data more secure than encrypting the whole system. It just means a different set of possible attacks. So it just kind of reduces the opportunity for somebody to come in and hack your stuff. So, so that's being worked on. I'm going to follow that. And it actually kind of evolved from, the KDE activities. I think that's probably one of the most underused features of KDE. And it's a way for you to do different things within the confines of a particular area in Plasma, but it's not really the paging system that is part of Linux and Unix and mm-hmm. all the others. Anyway, so it started there, but then kind of evolved over to, well, why keep it just for activities? Why don't you just have it in the general area, or the general system itself, so that you can encrypt folder sets and sets of documents and things within a operational system that's available. So thought that was kind of interesting. I'm going to keep an eye on it. And this came out from Ivan Kukic. He's a developer for KDE last week. So there's that. And I think the only other thing that I had, just hang on just a second here. One last KDE thing. Let's see here. Oh yeah. Flatpak versus Snap. You got that covered, Tom. So we're good. That's all it right. For KDE Corner.
I found that link about the podcast of the year thing.
Yeah.
It was actually on linuxquestions.org.
Okay.
And now I look at it. It's like a wrap up.
Are you telling us
last year? More people have voted. We're still at four listeners. So we're at 2.2% or 2.8% of the.
I'm going to go vote. Am I entitled to vote? I listen.
Yeah, I think you have to sign up for an account for on linuxquestions.org.
I already have an account.
Well,
I'm going to log in and
go vote.
All right.
Link will be in the show notes. Go vote for us, even though. Oh, wait. Voting ends February 7th, which was a week ago.
Last week. Oh, my gosh.
So maybe you can't vote anymore, Mary.
Hack the vote. Oh, oops. All right, that's as political as I'm going to get. So anyway, well, Tony, thanks for the info.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got?
Music.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
So I was looking around at my family. We watched that new movie, Trolls, that came out. It's a kids' movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And one of the big songs in it is Can't Stop That Feeling. And Susie made a parody of it.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going to play. So Can't Stop That Susie. Susie.
You can't. Susie the Troll.
Yeah. I got that freedom in my teeth. I got the power of this whole community. It's open. My choice, my own. I'm innovating always when I'm in my zone. Got that million in my pocket. Got that penguin at my feet. Got that hot code in my hands. It's open source. Ooh. Got that cloud, I got that storage. It all works phenomenally. That's the way that Suso rocks it. So don't stop. Under this hypervisor I chose. Nothing to hide, cause we got open court. When we lie fast, don't have to reload. It's down with downtown. Space walk, I manage my systems. At a glance. Feel so good by my system choice that I dance. Only open source for me, it's my stance. Back the millions got the moves, so keep dancing. So just dance. Ooh, open technology. Adapt to win, let's just begin. I'm feeling free. Remote accession, I'm in control. Rim is high, no swap use, cause I'm in my zone. Cause I got that chameleon in my pocket. Got that penguin at my feet. I run that doctor in his aim, it never drops. I run my seventh into the top it. Data stored phenomenally. Distributed data's how we rock it. So don't stop. No matter what file system I chose.
nothing to hide, cause we got open court. When we lie fast, don't have to reload. Down with downtown. Space walking in space systems, at a glance, glance, glance. Figuring with sauce so I can dance, dance, dance. Only your first source for me is my stance, stance, stance. Millions got the moves, so keep dancing.
Can't stop us, suicide.
So just dance, dance, dance.
Get up and open.
So just dance, dance, dance.
Can't stop us, suicide.
Woo. So just dance, dance, dance.
Get up and open.
Yeah. So keep dancing.
Can't stop the suicide.
Managing my systems at a glance, glance, glance.
Feel
so good by my system choice that I dance, dance, dance.
Can't stop the suicide.
Only your resource for me is my stance, stance, stance.
The
millions got the moves, so keep dancing.
Can't stop
everybody
the suicide.
Sing. All I've been feeling in my body.
All right.
You guys have anything else going for the? Anything else we need to talk about before we end the show?
No.
It's just that we're glad glad you listened to us if you're still with us this long.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it for me.
All right. So you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 226.
Pizza, pizza.
That's right. This is Tony Bemis,
Mary Tomich,
and Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.